Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have Tamika back here with me again. We're going to be talking about Rush Hour 2 for Black History Month. So we're going to be talking about that. Yes, that's right. We're doing this for Black History Month. So let's go on ahead. Let's dive into the world of Rush Hour 2. I was excited to do this the first time for Rush Hour 1 and Rush Hour 2, but we're not going to speak of Rush Hour 3 because we're not doing it. So let's go on ahead. Let's get on with the show. And hey, Tamika, how are you? Why? It's actually true. We're doing it for... Yeah, I can't lie to the people that this is what the people wanted. They wanted Rush Hour.
Okay. Black History Month, though.
It is part of Black History Month. Anyways, welcome back to the show. I do appreciate you coming back for Rush Hour 2.
Thank you. I wore a colorful wig, too, for you and the viewers.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. It looks really good.
We got money in the budget now, so I was able to get a wig.
Yep, that's all I can do is just wigs. I can't do anything else other than
that. Yeah.
But anyways, we're here to talk about Rush Hour 2.
Oh, okay.
And I was just wondering, like, what was a young Tamika doing whenever this movie came out?
Rush Hour 2. Where was I? Did I see this in theaters? Maybe I saw this in theaters. I don't think I snuck in like the first one. I think I saw this one in theaters.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen this one in theaters as well.
Yeah.
I was actually on summer vacation in Boston when I went and seen this for the very first time. But going off of that, like, what do you remember from this film growing up? What did you like about it? And how do you feel about it nostalgically?
I can't put my finger on it growing up. But I know that in our society today, it does not age well.
No, some of it doesn't age well.
Some of the jokes, you're like, whoa, that is just way too out there right now.
But some of it was also some of it with pop culture and stuff like that, things that were going around in the world that we lived in at that time.
Yeah.
Especially the Kobe Bryant joke that with Chris Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there are some things that don't age well because either it's pop cultural references, things around the world that were happening, and things like that. Those things don't hold up, especially when we get into this other thing where Lee is dancing to a particular song. But we'll talk about that a little later. But for me, nostalgically, I remember quoting this. This actually has some great rememberable stuff that happens. Never touch a Chinaman's CD. Because if we're listening to the Beach Boys, I'm Michael Jackson, you're Toto. You mean Tito? Toto is what we had last night for dinner. But I still remember quotes from this movie.
Yeah.
To this day. So this one has even more rememberable quotes than the first one.
Yeah.
But if you could give this a score, if you could remember some of the things that you liked about it from when you were a teenager or however old you were at the time, what would you give it?
What did I give the first one? Like an 8?
You gave it close to like an 8. Or yeah, I believe an 8.
I will say for this one, I give it a 7.
Okay. Yeah, I have to go maybe a little low just for the simple fact that, you know, nostalgically, I remember going to the movie theaters. Yes, it's still quotable, but is it as quotable as the first one where we have one of those one-liners, stuff like, who do you have? Chelsea Clinton? And stuff like that. You don't have those kind of memorable quick, one-liners like you do in the first one but the second one is just as good as the first one in my opinion, but yeah, I'm gonna have to go at least a 7.95 on it. So that's where I'm at nostalgically for it. Here's some other little fun details that I've actually looked up.
Okay.
About this movie. So it has a budget of 90 million. It made $347.3 million worldwide box office.
Wow.
So it made even more money, which is also probably why we got another sequel years later. This came out in 2001. The first one came out in 98.
Yeah, I was in high school. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like a freshman in high school whenever I first seen this. So, you know, just seeing it on the big screen, I loved watching the first two Rush Hours in the theater and stuff like that. Then look, there's also this other thing too I wanted to tell you about as well. So behind the scenes and productions, the real casino explosion, the explosion at the Red Dragon Casino was filmed at the actual Desert Inn in Las Vegas right before it was demolished. The crew coordinated with the casino to use real demolition footage.
Oh, cool.
And of course, you know, Jackie Chan is always going to get injured, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So as always, Jackie Chan did his own stunts during the scenes where he jumps on a bamboo scaffold. It broke unexpectedly, leading to a dangerous fall. He still completed the stunt, of course. Chris Tucker's payday, Tucker was paid $20 million for Rush Hour 2, which made him one of the highest paid actors at the time.
For Black History Month.
Yep, Black History. cameos and cast details. So Don Cheadle's martial arts role, Don Cheadle appears as Kenny, the owner of a Chinese restaurant. He only agreed to take the role on the condition that he could fight Jackie Chan and speak Chinese in the scene. So that's a little bit of small details with the trivia. So now we're moving on to our scene by scene, erasing the nostalgia from our minds like it never even happened. And now we're going on with our Rush Hour 2 review. And so, welcome to Movie Lovers Unite, the only place where Jackie Chan's stunts make us question our life choices and Chris Tucker's one-liners make us reconsider our career paths.
That's right. Tonight, we're talking Rush Hour 2, the movie that taught us that Vegas casinos are great and high-stake action and getting your ass kicked in style.
Jackie Chan is out here flipping off balconies like it's Casual Tuesday, while Chris Tucker is screaming his way through crime fighting like he just saw his tax bill.
Oh, yeah. And John, I added that part. John, don't forget the epic fight scene where Jackie uses everything itself. Because why shoot a guy when you can kick him in the face using a refrigerator door?
The only reason why I'm here in Hong Kong because you said you was going to show me a good time. I'm on vacation, man, and I want some mushu. I want to see some women, man.
That's right, Tamika. And so buckle up, grab some mushu, and let's dive into the action comedy and absolute chaos that is Rush Hour 2, and let's go. So,
I hate you.
No, you don't. This is why you love me. This is why you come on the show. This is why you come on the show. Just for this.
God.
Just for the intro. You don't come in here just for the scene by scene. You know that.
Okay.
So,
me and my wig.
A few weeks after the events of Rush Hour, one LAPD detective, James Carter, Chris Tucker, is in Hong Kong with his good friend, Hong Kong Police Force Chief Inspector Lee. As he was sent to vacation with Lee after saving Chinese consul's daughter in Los Angeles, Carter is interested in having a good time. However, soon after he arrives, a bomb delivered by a mysterious woman explodes in the United States Consul General Embassy, murdering two U.S. custom agents in the process. Inspector Lee is contacted into the case, which becomes personal when it is discovered that it somehow involves Ricky Tan, his late police officer's father's former partner. Tan, who was suspected but never proven of having a role in Lee's father's death, is now a leader of the Triads, the most deadly gang in all of China. Over a phone call while driving Carter around during their vacation, Lee secretly attempts the case while hiding it to Carter over their first lead to an undercover at a bar. So I love how it opens up, where Lee and them are having a good time. They're listening to the Beach Boys. And then you have this one scene where Chris Tucker's trying to talk Chinese to these girls that are just passing him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You ask them to sacrifice a small goat. So then you also have where he gets the phone call. So, of course, Lee winds up taking the call. Mm-hmm. And then they go into this nightclub. And, of course, you know, Chris Tucker being Chris Tucker, he walks in there, gets on the karaoke machine, and starts singing to Michael Jackson.
Of course.
So what do you think of the opening scene?
I like the opening scene. It's a good role reversal where now Jackie is in the driver's seat and Chris Tucker is the passenger. Or Lee is in the driver's seat and Carter is the passenger. You know, he's like you said, don't touch a Chinese man's radio. But then they were singing,
Go ahead.
Then they were singing like the Beach Boys in Hong Kong. So you can see a lot of cultural influences happening in this one scene.
Right. And that's something that I wanted to mention, though, too, that you just talked about, was the fact that, you know, now it's actually Bren now in Lee's world, opposed to how we were in Carter's world in the first one. And now he's getting a glimpse of what it's like to be a Hong Kong police officer investigating the stuff that's happening. You also have behind all that darkness with the bomb exploding, then you cut into Carter and also Lee singing on top of their lungs with Beach Boys and stuff. I definitely like the chemistry between the two of them. It was like no time has been lost since we last seen these two together. So the chemistry still works, in my opinion. I can just see them bouncing off of each other. They're doing really good at keeping the same vibe as the first one. So that's something that I have to say was really positive. And then when, of course, Carter winds up seeing one of the other Chinese guys on stage, he goes, oh, hell no, trying to do a Michael Jackson song.
Yeah.
And never going to give you, what's that song that he was
doing? Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Stop Until You Get Enough. Yeah.
That's all we can do, sing.
Right. Yeah. I copyright infringement and poor singing, and I don't want to disturb our viewers any more than we have to our listeners.
Come on.
But I definitely like how, you know, Lee's over there trying to investigate, keep everything on the DL, and you have Carter, who doesn't even know. He's still thinking he's on vacation.
Yeah.
And stuff. So he's enjoying himself. And he goes, and then he has all the girls on stage with him and stuff like that. And I like how Lee's just looking at him. He goes, Carter, what are you doing? He goes, get on, Lee.
Come on, Lee. Come on. Come on.
I like how Carter tries his best to speak Chinese, and he just sucks at it.
Yes. Like most of
them. Because he asks everybody to shave their butts.
With samurai swords.
Samurai swords.
Yeah. Yeah, that's called not keeping to your Duolingo streak.
Exactly.
Very important stick to Duolingo.
Definitely. But I definitely have to say, the karaoke scene still makes me laugh today. I thought that scene still holds up as far as that goes. Then he's looking for Ricky Tan. So he goes, okay, can anyone tell me where Ricky Tan is at? I'm Detective Carter. This is Jackie. This is Lee. Can anyone tell? And so I like how, you know, Jackie's over there. Well, Lee's over there trying to tell everybody, it's okay. My friend is drunk.
Mm-hmm.
He does not know what he's doing. He's talking in Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be translating for Chris Tucker. And I just thought it was hilarious. I just thought that the back and forth was just hilarious with that scene.
Well, yeah, too. If you remember the first one, Jackie told him that he can come to Hong Kong with him and be on vacation. So they've been working his cases, and he's like, you know, you promised me we would go on vacation, and I'm tired of being at work. I came out here for vacation. Yeah. So he told him we're going to a club, but like you said, Ricky was there. So Jackie was still working. Jackie/Lee was still working. I mean, I'd be pissed too.
Me too. I'm on vacation with this dude, and you're going to work cases while we're on vacation, and I don't even know anything about it.
You trick me into coming to this club, and you tell me it's a gangster club, and it's like, what?
For the triads of all
people. Yeah. Come on now. This man, that's the best time that man done had with that karaoke.
And then you're going to try and strip it away from him after the fact.
Yeah.
You have to lay that bombshell on him.
The women were feeling it. The gangsters were confused. They were like, who is this man?
I loved it. I loved every single bit of that. And, you know, then I don't blame Carter for being pissed off at him. It's like, look, man, you said you were going to introduce me into your world, into your culture and stuff, and I'm not able to enjoy my vacation the way I want to enjoy my vacation because you keep on taking every single case that comes across you.
Yeah.
At that point, I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to go back to L.A. You do you. I'll do me. Deuces. But no, Carter still stays with him. And that's one of the things I have to say. This is like a really good buddy cop movie to the point where the friendship is very believable, and the fact that they even extended on it makes me even happier for it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, you could see the bond happening between them because any sensible person would have just left. It's like, right. I don't got time for this. I'm going to go.
But yeah, while at the bar, Lee tells Carter to blend in due to poor performance of a classic song by a local onstage. As Carter eliminates, Carter decides to show off his rendition. Catching him on stage, Lee explains to Carter they are supposed to be investigating with Carter, disappointed that Lee lied to him without staying out on vacation. The cover is blown and attracts the attention of Exio, who leader of the triad group operating the bar. Lee notices her and gives chase with Carter following along. The triad group decide to ascend a building, scuffling, and Lee follows suit. Fighting the group along the way up, Carter ascends the staircase to the roof before Lee and later Carter are attacked by Lee, who leaves them dangling over the scuffling despite Lee's assurance. This ties holding the scaffolding break and they fall, crashing onto the dumpster. So I like how Lee is over there outside and basically they're chasing this woman down and they're climbing up the bamboo. And at first Carter's going to go on ahead and go with Lee, and he winds up going up there, and all of a sudden he sees Lee kicking them back down. And he's like, you know what? Never mind. I'm just going to take the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. He takes the stairs, and as he's taking the stairs, this woman, this little elderly woman's walking down the stairs. He goes, out of my way, Kobe.
In Cantonese. Otherwise, he would have cussed her out.
Right. But that joke doesn't hold up now because of the fact with Kobe passing away. But at that time, though, he was that's another thing with pop culture. He was a pop culture icon with the Los Angeles Lakers and stuff like that. So he was someone that people would recognize. So I understand why they would put that in the film, and also to make that joke because he's actually the only black dude in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So it makes it funny.
I was going to say that. Like all black people, if they're in Hong Kong or whatever, like I would be Beyonce. They're like, Beyonce. And I'm like, what? And then it's like either Beyonce, they probably wouldn't do Kobe. They'll probably do like Shaq or Chris Tucker. somebody else. I'm like, what is this? But yeah, I like that scene. I was trying to figure out how to pronounce her name too. I think it's Zhang Ziyi.
I'm just going to call her Huli. That's what I'm going to call her. Huli.
Okay. Yeah, but, she played in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yep.
But yeah, I like that scene. Just them going up the bamboo raffle. It reminded me of oh my gosh, what is the name of that Marvel movie? You know what I'm talking
The
about?
Hidden Rings.
What?
You know that Chinese movie, the
Hidden Ring. No, that's not the name of it, but that's what I'm thinking about. Oh my god.
That's all I remember. I don't remember the
Chong Yi.
Yeah, Chong Li.
we're just as bad as the movie.
But I know what you're saying. Oh, I get where Jesus, you're coming from.
That's gonna bother me.
Chang Li, Ching Shi is the look name of the movie.
Look it up. Look it up while Chang I'm talking.
Chang Shi. I'm telling you, that's Ching Shi.
No, look it up while I'm talking. Anyway.
That's the name of the movie. I'm telling you, it's Chang Shi. Yes, it is.
What is it?
I'm looking dead at it.
What is it?
Chang Shi. Chang. S-H-I-N-G-C-H-I. The Legend of the Ten Rings.
Oh my gosh. I can't deal with this. Chang Z.
What? You're welcome.
What? Chang. Okay, we're moving on for the sake of time. Sorry. Anyway, it reminded me of that movie because, there was a, bamboo scene? It was something
yeah,
kind
was
of similar. Yeah. Well, they were on the rafters, and they were
on the rafters.
Yeah,
and then of course she winds up kicking them down, kick them onto the bamboo, and that's when Lee winds up saying, "Chinese bamboo, very strong. It won't break."
Yes, that scene reminded me of that movie we can't pronounce for some reason. it made me wonder: was there influence involved? You know, cause it's like almost, not almost scene from scene, but there's something from, anyway, I'm moving on. Yes, I like that part with the bamboo. And I can see how Jackie would have got hurt. Every time I see his stunts, I'm like, oh, is he going to fall? And then I'm thinking, oh, maybe there's like a mattress or something that below or something that can cushion his fall, but I didn't see anything. And I'm like, what if this man fall to his death? Like, I know that's the end of the
thing. I'm afraid for his life. Like, every single time I see him, I'm thinking, what if this doesn't work out for him?
Yeah.
And this is going to be like another Brandon Lee situation to where they have to probably do CGI on somebody else's face or something.
Oh, I know. And AI is just the worst.
Yes, it definitely is. But
yeah, the bamboo part where he was like lingering off the bamboo. That was really scary for me. It was exciting, but scary.
Same here for me, though, too. Like, I'm afraid for Lee and also for, of course, with Chris Tucker's character as well. I'm also scared for Carter as well because, you know, because even though you know this is a buddy cop movie, sometimes you also forget that this is supposed to be a comedy and that there's no way that they're going to kill up the two main characters, but there is that suspense of what if these characters don't make it, you know?
Yes. Shame.
So.
Oh my God. I'm still. Sorry. I'm like,
I let that go about 10 minutes ago.
I was like, no, let's get this.
We're not going to get it. Okay. We already did stop.
Shang Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Damn
I told
it.
You that.
You said Chong Chi.
Chang. Anyways, the next day, Carter angrily demands an explosion.
I'm going to get fans in China.
So now we're going into the next scene. Okay. The next day, Carter angrily demands an explanation from Lee, who revealed about the embassy bombing and the two Americans killed. Nonetheless, Lee decides to make it up to Carter, bringing him to a massage parlor where Carter is immured with the prospect of being massaged by beautiful Chinese ladies. Coincidentally, Tan appears in the same parlor as they are, which Lee decides to call for aid while Carter attempts to take matters into his own hands. Mm-hmm. Confronting Tan, Lee is soon forced to step in where Carter makes a scene destroying Tan's laptop. Spotting Lee, Tan goes to greet, but Lee requests to talk in private, yet Tan is insistent to remain as his men all around. He leaves and brawl breaks out. Lee and Carter initially emerge victorious and defeating all of Tan's men until reinforcements arrive. Dumping them both over the highway completely naked, they embarrassingly make their way through the streets to Yahu Ma Tai police station, where Lee is stationed with his superior, Captain Chen. Carter briefs Lee, who brushes off the matter before realizing he had left his passport back at the massage parlor, and sets out to return there, bumping the same mysterious woman who enters the police station to deliver a package, which later also turns out to be a bomb. Hmm. So let's talk about the massage parlor.
Okay, let's do it.
So I love the massage parlor part of it, because now he's like in a buffet line, right? Because I like how they roll up to it. He goes, oh, okay, Lee, okay. You know, you got me, okay. Now you're talking. I'm glad that we're doing this vacation now.
Yep.
You know, leave all that other crap behind.
Yep.
So they go in, and the woman goes, okay, you can have any girl you want. Any girl? Yeah, you can have any girl you want. Goes, okay, what about her? Yeah, I gotta have her. And then she's over there pushing her boobs up. And so, and then she goes, oh yeah, my back, my neck right here. It kind of hurts right here, my back. And then, he's taking too long because he's getting almost every single girl that's on the line.
Yeah, and Lee don't got nobody.
No, and even Lee is starting to feel kind of jealous.
Yeah, so you need to hurry up.
Man, you know we're kind of black man in front of a buffet line? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Jeez Louise. I would like that scene, but with a bunch of dudes.
Of course you would. For me, I didn't mind it.
Yes, but I can see the appeal if you're a guy and then you got like they open the door and like it's like a mountain full of beautiful women.
For you, it'd be Jason Momoa, a mountain filled with Jason Momoas.
Or some men in the parlor, they can massage me.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, but yeah, I like that scene. Especially when he said he had money, then that's when they introduced him to all the women. You got money? You American?
Oh, you American.
You got American money? Yeah, a credit card. Okay, swipe. She snatched that card. Swipe over here, please.
Just like that, it's backed out.
Yeah, it is. And when he was like, I take her, I was like, how much are those women?
That's gonna be at least 5,000 yen, if not more.
Something? Yeah. And then they were getting massaged and, you know, like you say, he saw Ricky and, Jackie, oh my God, sorry, we gotta be in character. Lee went to get backup because he wasn't gonna confront Ricky on his own, but I like when Chris Tucker had enough, he was like, Ricky Tan, come on, get up. Come on, let's go. Did you hear me, Ricky? I said, get up. It's time to go.
We've been looking for you. We found you. You need to get your ass to the police station.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm Lee's muscle, and then he like take his jacket, his robe off, and it's like I see some muscle, but the rest of it's struggling.
It's like he worked up his upper body, but there's nothing. It looks like a potato.
Yeah, he didn't like stay. You know, you gotta lift like every day. But anyway, that fight scene was pretty cool, and it's almost like I told you on the last movie, Jackie Chan uses everything in his environment to fight. He used the ottoman. He probably used his robe. This man fighting in a bathrobe, kicking guys' butts with an ottoman. I've never seen such a thing.
Me either. That is definitely something new that I haven't seen before. And then let's just talk about this. Chris Tucker's character just going ham on the laptop.
Because
what did I tell you?
Get your ass up, Ricky. I was like, what the hell is he doing? And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. They're like, all his men just like raised from the dead. They just
up. All of a sudden they're just there to protect him. And then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. And he goes, look. That's an old model. I get you a new one with the DVD player on it. I'm like, dude, even now in today's time, that is also old.
Yeah, no one, They don't make DVD players in these laptops anymore, which I wish they would, because I have DVDs.
Well, I got a DVD burner, DVD burner on it. But yeah, anyways, but it's an external.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, but yeah, they don't make those anymore. That's a little, that's another thing that's kind of dated with this movie is the technology within the film itself.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of dated today. So you have pop cultural references and also technology that's kind of dated.
Yeah.
As well. Then, like you said, the action sequences where basically you have Carter and you also have Lee mm-hmm. flipping each other over furniture. Mm-hmm. You have, and then also like how they wind up doing this high five type of thing where they yes. both wind up and then they stand in June B.
Yes. That was yeah. awesome. High five and a kick.
Yes. Awesome. And then rolling each other over on the furniture and then, Lee comes in over Chris Tucker's character over Carter and they wind up kicking out everyone's out. I thought the stunt work choreography was fantastic for this.
Yes. Yes. I applaud all stunt workers and I'm just amazed at all of it. Especially when it's Jackie doing most of his own stunts. I'm like, okay, did that not? I mean, I'm sure it hurt. It's a stupid question to ask, but it's like, oh my God. I just get nervous every time he's on screen.
I do too. I'm afraid for his life.
It's like, I get nervous with him and Tom Cruise. I'm like, Tom, oh my God, you don't have to jump off that mountain.
But he's doing it for our entertainment purposes.
I know that's
they're putting their lives on the line for us.
I know that's how Tom be getting me in the movie theaters. You know how hard it is to go to the movie theaters and half the movies suck. And if Tom is there, I'm like, I feel obligated because this man done jumped off the mountain and broke his leg. And I feel like I have to be there.
We feel like that we're obligated to pay for his insurance through our ticket, through our money for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, I'm like, my money for this ticket is going toward his insurance because I don't think they insure these people.
No, I don't think so either. It's like, well, dude, we try to get you to sign an NDA, but, you know, we have stunt people, but you don't want them. So guess what? You're now on your own.
I just got to be there for Tom.
I gotta be there for Jackie and also for Tom.
I gotta be there for both of them, man.
Yep. But I know that you wanted to ask me about Ricky Tan as far as the villain goes.
Yeah, I feel like they could have pushed his a little bit more, but I guess that was his muscle, Zhang Ziyi.
Yeah, that's her, that's his muscle woman, you know?
I felt kind of not balanced, like, I was starting to see a little bit more of her on screen than I was Ricky. And then she was kind of like a weak muscle for me, not to discredit her stunt work. She's a great martial artist too, but as an actress, it was kind of like flat.
Right. There's no layers. Don't forget, this is also early 2000s, so there was like no really big layers to the actress at all. She was just there to just kick their ass and then walk away, you know?
Yes, but the muscle in the first movie, he came with some, he was more dynamic for me.
I do agree with that though. I do feel like, you know, with the villain, the main villain of the first one was more threatening than Tan.
Yeah.
Because think of it like this, you're dealing with a triad. Mm-hmm. So therefore, why am I going to do the dirty work when I can just go on ahead and just send somebody else to kill somebody?
Yes, but
versus Jun Tao, who does everything.
Yes, Ricky felt like the accountant. Like,
I can see that.
Somebody off to the side. I didn't really get like, this is the guy in charge.
I wish they would actually put like, have some type of danger element with him to show us that he is a dangerous person to be messing with.
Yeah, because a little bit. They had it.
I don't know. For me, I wanted to see him beat up somebody. Somebody owed him some money or something like that to show us how dangerous this man is. All we know is that he killed Jackie's dad mm-hmm. in the past life, and he's still operating as a mobster now, as a triad. And that I wanted to see a little bit more from it, but I understand for sake of comedy purposes and stuff like that, it was just there to be like a one layered type of situation with these characters. They're not supposed to be drawn out like they are. They're supposed to be, but I just didn't feel that danger element with him to like I did with Juntao. Juntao, I felt like he was someone to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Maybe they were trying to go for like that smart, nerdy type gangster. Cause that's what he was. He was like, I'm the brains of the operation. But I felt like he could have been like the accountant.
Or well, he didn't do a very good job. I hope he backed up his files after,
yeah.
Hopefully the hard drive is still good after, Chris Tucker beat the hell out of his laptop after what Carter did.
Yeah, it just wasn't given. Like with John Tao, when it was revealed, it was like, oh, this is the father in the first film. This is his best friend. And I was like, oh, there's so many deep layers of betrayal on my heart. But this one, yeah, I mean, he killed Lee's father and he was Lee's partner, but I didn't feel that emotion.
No, there was no real emotion to it unless you got to the point where we'll get into it like later on where Lee's pissed off at him for killing his dad. And that's like we're later on towards the end of the film.
Yes, I needed to feel more betrayal. Like if Philip Seymour Hoffman played this part, he would just turn it out and you'd be like, that bastard. Can't believe he did that to your dad. And this one, you like, oh, that's sad. He did that to your dad.
Then it'll be whitewashing because it's coming out in Hong Kong.
Well, that's what they did in the first one. Come on now.
You're right. But I think they wanted to try to do something different.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they should have found like Jet Li. Oh my God. Jet Li. He would have been like, I would have been Jet Li. Oh my God. Somebody needs to get Jet Li. He is just a menace.
Jet Li would have been terrifying, even though I think that it would be too much on the nose because don't forget he was in Lethal Weapon 4 in 98, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So don't forget. So 3 years later, 99. About 4 years later, it'd be like, well, do I really want to be playing a role that I've already played before?
Yeah, and Chow Yun-Fat, he probably was in something else too.
Yeah, he did Romeo Must Die, I think, in the 90s as well.
Oh, Chow Yun-Fat. He's like the other one. He's like the taller one, and Jet Li is kind of short.
Right, Jet Li is the short one.
Yeah, Chow, he's done martial art films. It's weird because at that time there were only like three or four Asian martial art actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Romeo Must Die was Jet Li. Yeah.
It's like, how many of them can you rotate in in a movie? And they were like rotating. Oh my God. And now we got a lot.
Yeah. So my thing is this. So then we get into the whole entire thing at the police station. Mm-hmm. But what do you think of them just dropping them off naked in Hong Kong? I know it's for a gag, but at the same time, I'm like, really? So how old are we? This is stuff that you do in college. This is what the triads are doing to people.
Yeah. That's
and you're two cops that are going into a place to try to investigate Tan to bring them in. You're going to die. That's the reality of it. But I understand this is a comedy. I understand that what they're going for is laughs and stuff. Yes. But in the reality of it, me looking through it in the lenses of a non-nostalgic thing, I'm looking at it through those lenses now as an adult. I'm like, really? This is shit that you do to a freshman in college.
Yeah, who does that?
They do.
I'm sorry, John. I would have did the same thing.
To me or...
No, to those two, I would have been like stripping them. I wouldn't even get on a pillow cushion. I just would have kicked them out in the middle of the street and be like, out the police.
Did you know they actually did that in the traffic in Hong Kong?
Yeah, they had to have pillows so if they'd be arrested.
Right, they had to have pillows or something. But still, that was actually something that they didn't do. They didn't stop traffic or anything.
Yeah, I wonder if like shooting in Hong Kong is like shooting in California. People go, another film crew.
It's just Hollywood. It's just, you know, it's everyday life.
It's okay. Like Asian Hollywood. They're like, what
it's
else?
It's just Jackie there? Again.
Yeah, boy, that old Jackie again. Cause like, you know, when they have those scenes and they're like in the middle of the street or they're in the marketplace and people just walking, they just be like, whatever, it's Tuesday.
It's just Tuesday. This is another Tuesday.
Another film crew. I'm finna go get my vegetables. Can you imagine that? You in the marketplace and you see Jackie Chan over there shooting and you like, well, what I'm gonna cook for dinner today? Like, it's surreal. Right. I would've been like, Geralt said, no, Jackie, I love you.
But yeah, now we get into this other thing too, where Carter bumps into those women at the police station. She has a package. It winds up blowing up. And at that point, Carter was already walking out the police door to find his passport and stuff to go back over to the massage parlor.
Yeah.
So
why didn't they see that she was suspicious? Like she got dark shades on, a bad wig. And a hat that ain't barely sitting on top of the wig.
I don't know. Must be a Hong Kong thing. I don't know.
And you just waltzed up in the police station. Hello, UPS. Nothing.
And then I like how Carter's over there just looking at her, trying to make moves on her and stuff. And then you have Lee who's, because now they're trying to send Carter back up to Cali, up to Los Angeles. He goes, it's okay with me. I haven't had fun since I got here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then you have Carter who's roaming the streets of Hong Kong trying to look for the massage parlor.
Yes, yes.
And that's when he's looking for a massage parlor.
Yeah.
Then he's over there with the taxi cab. But first we get this one scene where he's going up to this one woman who has like live chickens.
Yes.
Just massage parlor. Here, chicken. No, put the chicken down. I don't want the chicken. Massage parlor. All of a sudden she turns the chicken's ass to him and goes, whoa.
Chicken, no. And then she put it down and finna get the cleave. He's like, no, hey, I'm out of chicken. What's wrong with you?
I just want I like my chicken dead like Popeyes.
Popeye, you know what Popeye chicken is?
And then he goes over to the taxi cab and he's saying something in Chinese. And then he stands and goes, now you're speaking my language because he ended up giving him the money. So I thought that was a pretty comical bit that they did with, while this is going on, you have Lee who thinks he's dead.
Yes.
Because devastated over his assumed partner's demise, Lee regrets not taking Carter on vacation, but soon learns from Chin that Tan will be attending a dinner party on his private yacht. Chin tells Lee he has no interest in informing Sterling and wants only the Hong Kong police force to handle the matter. Lee infiltrates the docked yacht in secret while Carter makes his way on board and blends in with guests. Mm-hmm. Carter strikes a conversation with a woman named Isabella Malona and meets her partner, Stephen Rain. Also on board, Lee corners a thug over Tan's bombing the police station and kill Carter. Before Carter meets him, revealing to Lee he was not dead, their presence, however, has caught Tan's attention and sends his men to escort the two to meet him. Tan scolds his underling, revealed to be Wu Li, before ordering to leave as Lee and Carter arrive. So, this is the scene that I'm telling you that doesn't age well. Because Lee is over there bumping to P. Diddy. I'll be missing you. And as he's getting that call, he finds out, as he's trying to mourn his friend's death and feeling guilty over the fact that all he wanted to do was get some mushu.
Yeah.
Because remember when he tells his police captain, all he wanted was some mushu.
Yeah, that's all.
And then you know, then he gets the call, hey, look, they're going to be on the yacht and stuff like that. So, you know, I like how Lee is pretty much blending in with the crowd and stuff like that, trying to figure out what's going on. And then you have, I like how he sneaks on the boat, though. He uses styrofoam to get to, under his feet, and he glides himself.
I was going to ask you, was there any other way he could have got across that river without using the styrofoam? Because usually they, I don't know what it's called, but they like.
Like a glide?
Yeah. They like glide across the wire.
I think that was like the only thing he could think of quickly. Otherwise, the boat would have probably left him.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's true.
Okay. But I thought it was a really cool, sneaky way of actually getting on the yacht. And then you have Carter, who winds up sneaking on the yacht right behind him, and they don't even, he doesn't even realize that Carter's even alive at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, he was trying to make moves on, Isabella. And I forgot, he did some lame pickup line on her and like, oh, this is my yacht, the SS Minna.
Yeah, Johnson. Johnson. SS Meadow Johnson.
Yeah. And she was like, this is your yacht. This is my friend's yacht. It's called the Red Dragon. Oh, I must be on the wrong yacht. No wonder my key didn't work. I said, your key. No wonder my key didn't work.
I like also how he says, my yacht is your yacht. And then she's saying, mi casa es su casa.
Man, come on. My key didn't work. I don't know why I just bust out laughing at this thing. It made no sense.
It doesn't, but it's also funny because, of course, the delivery. I mean, any scene or anything in a comedy can be funny. It's just the delivery of the joke.
Yes.
And it just works.
Yes, especially when Chris Tucker is delivering it.
But, yeah. Stephen Rain is on board. He was also Isabella's boyfriend. And I feel like he's also very one-noted this time, too. I feel like his character is very one-noted to the point where you don't even care about him, opposed to being the embassy's friend. You actually know that they have some kind of friendship. With this one, you don't have that continuity within the movie itself for us to care about him. He's very one-noted. We get rid of him right away after the towards the end of it.
Yes, and... I hate to say it, but Isabella got kind of annoying to me. Or maybe the bit where she just kept playing them two alone and was like, oh, you do this for me. And well, you'll get to that later.
Right. Because I gotcha. Because it's kind of like that Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thing that with Johnny Depp, where you don't know if this is the bad guy or the good guy kind of thing. And it's just one of those things of like, okay, is she good? Is she not good? She's saying that we're going to be working for the Secret Service, and she's just throwing balloons up in the air.
No, Johnny Depp did a good job on that, because I was like, is he good? Is he bad? Is he drunk?
Right, but I get what I'm just talking about, like, the back and forth of not knowing it could be annoying because of the delivery of how the actress is playing the character is basically what I'm trying to say.
Now, what was annoying was when they had to get back on that boat and do another U-turn. Like, go back on the boat again. It's like, oh, no. Okay, but yes, thank you, John. Yeah, that part, she didn't pull that off as well. You know, I don't know if there's a way you could do that more smoothly, but it was kind of like, I'll even put my boobs in your face. Oh, you can help me. I'm part of the FBI or whatever she was. And you can help me with this investigation. I'm like, lady, if you don't do your own work, it's like she was passing her homework off to them to do.
Right. But it's like that G-14 classified situation.
Yeah. And then she just kept using her boobs and they fell for it every time.
Yep. But let's talk about this fact on the back of the yacht, though. So now we're getting into Tan and stuff. He goes, look, man, I don't know anything about what's going on or anything. Some people are also trying to kill me, and I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're like, okay, do you believe this guy? Do you not believe him? He's a triad. And, of course, they're at war with another person. So I'm like, I wish they would actually bring another villain into it.
Yes.
to give it a little bit of more of a surprise of who this other villain.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One is?
Yes.
But it's fake. It's a Fugazi because of the fact that there is no other boss. It's just him orchestrating this whole entire thing and stuff because he winds up getting shot. He ends up falling overboard on the yacht. Mm-hmm. You have this other fight scene with Jackie, kicking all these other guys off the boat and stuff. But I also like how he also, before that happens, I also like how you have this other scene that gets played out as well where you have Carter and you also have Lee that they realize Lee winds up finding out that Carter is still alive. And he puts him in that, puts the guy in that little raft, the donut raft.
Yeah.
And he goes, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? And he goes, man, no one understands the words.
No. You did it.
Okay. Man, nobody understands the words that are coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I agree with you. Well, I was gullible again, John. I believed him. I was like, oh, man, he wants to do good. But if they left it at that, that would have been great. Like, oh, he wants to do good. Oh, no, he's dead. And then somebody else, like, they double-crossed him. I would have liked that better. Like you
right.
said.
And then after this, you also have Hu Lee, who escapes alongside Kicking Carter, who tried to catch her and rendered him unconscious. Lee awakens Carter with the later noticing Rain remaining suspiciously calm despite the chaos and angry. Sterling holds Lee responsible for Tan's death and end of all possible leads, ordering him off the case with Carter to be returned to Los Angeles for involving himself. Lee decides to personally escort him to the airport, but confesses to Carter about the truth involving his father and Tan. Tan was partnered to Lee's father while serving in the police force when Lee's father found out Tan's involvement in the triads and had a lead. But he was killed alongside Tan subsequently resigning from the force. Given the case was never resolved with evidence gone, it was that made Lee desperate to get involved. Carter reminds Lee that his father likewise died unfairly and would do anything to square his passing. Mm-hmm. And they become motivated by their common desire once again to bring justice and meaning for their respective father's deaths. Mm-hmm. And the line of duty as such, Lee accompanies Carter back to the States. Mm-hmm. So, I actually like this scene where now you have the relatability between the two characters once again explaining Lee's also bringing it down to him. Look, man, I didn't mean to fool you to get on this vacation or anything. It's just I had to say yes to this one because of the fact of the events that happened with my father, and I wanted to find out more truth behind everything because it was making me wondering stuff. And then, of course, you have the realization with Carter. Like, look, man, I totally get it. All right. And remember, my father also died in the line of duty. I respect you. You respect me. You're my boy. I'm going to go on ahead and do this with you.
Yeah.
But my question is this. Do you feel like it's too much of the same beat from the first movie where it's not so much, it wasn't about motivation for the plot for the first one. It was about the relatability that these two guys can relate to each other. Mm-hmm. Now they're doing it again, but in a way to actually amplify the plot to where it's no longer about relatability. It's now this is something to give closure to a character.
I didn't think of it that way. But, yeah, how you put it that way. I thought it was, I don't know, I thought it was pretty good. Like, okay, he's taking this case because, you know, this guy shot his father. It was just, for me, it was lacking in the villain part. That didn't really help push the story through more.
Same. I feel like the villain is very weak with this in the writing.
Yes.
Of the story. That's the only thing that I can say negatively about it, is the fact that, you know, the villain is not that strong of a villain. It's a weak, it's weak in the writing. Also too, even with the muscle woman, Hu Li, she just keeps on knocking Chris Tucker out to the point where, yeah, it's funny, but I already seen this like 3 or 4 times. And how many more times do I have to see Chris, see Carter get kicked to the face and knock unconscious again?
Not that they should have a guy in that role. I'm sure, well, what's that other lady name? Michelle Yeoh?
I'm not sure what her name, the actress.
Well, she's in like every other movie now, but she's a martial artist. I don't know. It was just lacking.
Okay. So now we have on the plane, Carter tells Lee his theory of investigation. Every case has a rich white man behind it. And that in their current case, the man is Rain, whom Carter states is the Los Angeles hotel billionaire. Carter reveals what he saw on Tian's boat about Rain and his con demeanor during the shooting, deciding Rain will be their focus. Because remember, Rain just goes on ahead and sees everything going, and then he walks away like nothing even happened. Like, okay, yeah. It's just another Tuesday.
Yeah.
They also set up camp outside the Rain Towers, spying on Malina, who Carter met and tried to seduce on Tan's yacht. Lee takes over the observation and notices Malina undressed after Rain's departure before Carter confronts him over his strange fidgeting towards his previous supposed claim on a boring watch. They are interpreted when the strange woman, whom Carter recognizes as the lady that delivered the bomb back in the police station, hands Malina a package. Realizing Malina might be in danger, they rush to her room and attempt to handle the package themselves. But Malina proves that it was a whole misunderstanding with the package containing dollar bills. Meaning back in her suit, Malina tells the two men that she is undercover looking into Rain's money laundering of a U.S. $100 million in super bills, high-grade counterfeit dollar bills. She believes there are some already in circulation and tasks them both on the case. This is where we actually have that scene where she's like, now you guys were working for the secret, security.
Yeah.
Secret Service.
Yes. Yes.
But, okay. So let's talk about the scene about her undressing.
Of course, John. What do you want to know? Huh?
All I got to say is I love Snoopy.
Yes, of course, yes.
But I love this whole entire deal where, okay, Carter's wore out from him, from them on the airplane and stuff like that. And I like how he breaks it down to him. He goes, look, every person has a rich white person. Because even Lee's like, why are we going back to Los Angeles? What's there? He goes, everyone has a rich white man. We have to follow the rich white man. As if this is actually the white rabbit that we have to follow down through the hole of Alice in Wonderland. But I definitely like how, you know, Carter's laying down in bed and they're doing the stakeout and he goes, man, nothing's going on. I'm just going to lay down. Basically, that's what he's doing. And then Lee's like, yeah, I'm just going to see what's going on. And he winds up seeing Malina and he goes, oh yeah, like that.
He's like, oh baby. Go slowly.
Lee,
like, what you doing over there?
What are you doing, Lee? Nothing. No, very Lee, boring. No, very boring. No.
And then, like, of course, Lee know what kind of underwear she got on. I think it's from Victoria's Secret catalog.
Yeah, because then after that point, he goes, this is what he says. She's in a bra. Get out of the way. So then, he goes, oh, she got the skirt off.
Yeah.
She's got a little tattoo, too.
Yeah.
Snoopy. He goes, oh, I like Snoopy. Let me see.
Yeah.
Get back off.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, Victoria's Secret, page 63, spring catalog. This woman has great taste.
Yep. Yeah. He studies now. Yep. Yeah. I thought it was a bomb too. Like, how could you not if you know this woman just walking into random places with a box?
not only that, but twice we've seen it in the opening scene. Then we've seen her at the police station. Come on. And then I thought that was also another thing that was very weak is the fact that you use this woman to give this woman the $100, the bills. Come on now.
Yes. And the same raggedy wig.
Yeah. Trying to be Saya. The Asian edition.
Oh my God. Yeah. Who did she work for? The CIA?
She worked for the Secret Service or something to that effect. Because remember, after they barged in, they kick the door open. Lee and them get the package. Mm-hmm. They run up the roof. He goes, okay, Lee, throw it over. Where do I throw it? And he goes, they wind up throwing it on the ground. He goes, and they're waiting for the explosion, but it doesn't happen. And then Melina walks up. He goes, look, I've been working this case for a long time now. And I'm this close to probably arresting this guy. He goes, where's your badge? I want to see it. And it's like a little small badge on her bra.
Yeah. Show it to me again.
Show it to me again. I didn't see it the first time.
I thought that part too was weak. Like I get why she's undercover because counterfeit bills, but I totally forgot all about the Secret Service or whatever they are. I'm like, okay. And plus, like, don't you think that plot has been played out too?
Like, yeah. At that point, I'm like, okay.
Wasn't it something about counterfeit bills and they were Chinese?
Yeah, that was in the fourth one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen the fourth Lethal Weapon movie, but I believe that's actually the same thing because Jet Li was in that movie. So yeah, I think it was counterfeits. Because in three, it was dealing with automatic weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the fourth one had to have been the counterfeits.
Yes.
Then Lee and Carter pay a visit to Carter's old friend Kenny, played by Don Cheadle, an ex-con who runs an illegal gambling den frequented by triad members in the back room of the Chinese restaurant meeting Kenny. He tells them that a customer who was usually broke recently came into his establishment with a suspicious amount of $100 bills. Kenny found it odd since the customer doesn't exactly earn much, expected the bills to be fake, but held true according to Kenny's tallies. Carter decides to check them out himself and confirms that they are Rain's counterfeits. After showing Kenny that the counterfeits don't burn black like real bills do, Kenny subsequently tells them the customer's name is Zing and informs them of his workplace, fittingly being at Rain Plaza. Lee and Carter meet Zing and chase him after confronting him, but wind up being caught by the triads who are waiting for them. Before Hu Lee can get rid of them, Melina knocks Lee unconscious, then Hu Lee kicks Carter once again, like before, like the other two fucking times, and orders them to be taken on a container truck, because that's really original. The triads leave to move east. Okay, so...
Dang, John.
I'm sorry, that's what I have in parentheses. Okay. I'm just being honest.
Tell us how you really feel, Joe.
Right? Because at that point, I'm just annoyed with Hu Lee. I'm like, I don't care about this woman. I just want her to be gone from the movie. Dang. Because it's the same schnick over and over again.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even feel like it's funny anymore. I stopped laughing about 10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. After the first two times. Mm-hmm. So I like how Don Cheadle's in this. Mm-hmm. And I like how there's an illegal gambling thing in the back room and everything, and he's telling everybody just to calm down. He'll be right back. And then, of course, he winds up telling him that basically Carter winds up telling him, look, you have some counterfeit bills. This is fake. And then that's when he winds up ratting him out that this is, Zing is actually the one who was giving him the illegal bills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple of key points here. It's a Chinese restaurant in Crenshaw, and he's black. He's running this. And that's why Chris Tucker said, he said, you come in here and embarrass me in front of my wife and kids. He said, Kenny, you're embarrassing yourself in the community. Oh. You're a black man with a Chinese restaurant in Crenshaw.
Right. He might as well make some soul food while he's at it.
Yeah. And then he got like the whole Asian attire on and then a ponytail, which don't make no sense.
It's, no.
It's a glasses. I was like,
but he looked good though. I mean, Don Cheadle looked good for the character role. He looked like he was in a hip hop video though.
The way he talks to him, he's like, you come in here and you mess. I'm like, what is he doing? He's like, I'm feeling it. You come in here and you disrupt my business like this, just waiting to kick his ass.
Right.
But yeah, that thing with him and Jackie Chan, that was impressive.
Yeah, I like the back and forth with them talking to Cantonese, and he's like, what are you doing with the 7-Eleven? And Lee's like, what do you mean 7-Eleven? Because his mouth never closes.
Yeah, yeah. I was laughing at that too. That was a good one.
And then you have the confrontation with Zing at the plaza. He winds up running. And of course, the woman kicks Lee in the face.
Okay, John, we can move on from it. Every time you say it, it feels like you're just in pain.
I am. I'm in pain with this. I wish that she would knock me unconscious and put me in the back of the truck.
She will. She'll do it 5 more times.
I feel like I'm watching Groundhog's Day. But yeah. But I also didn't like this other thing with Melina and her and she winds up throwing the blade at her, the knife at her, and yeah. She's eating the apple. I'm like, okay. This also feels like one layer of you're supposed to be this vicious person. I don't even feel a threat.
They also didn't give Zhang or the actress that many speaking lines. I guess her English wasn't that great.
I don't know.
She
but,
had only
yeah.
like a few speaking lines in English. But the other guy had like a few speaking lines in English, but he was a little bit more charismatic.
Who, John Tao?
His name isn't John Tao. I keep telling you that. His name is some dude.
John Tao was the guy in the first
no,
one.
No, he's not. John Tao is not the Asian guy. John Tao is the white dude.
No, John Tao was the Asian dude. That
no.
one was, bite
Go
me like a man.
Go back and look at it.
No, that's John Tao, I think.
It's
the
not
Asian
John
guy.
No, is it? No. Now
okay.
I'm doubting myself.
Okay. So anyways... So this is what winds up happening though too. Lee and Carter wake up tied to a harness in the truck, transporting Chinese warrior statues, manning to free themselves. They knock over one of the statues by accident and reveal that the contaminants, the counterfeit money was transported by VIA them. Carter takes some of the bills as evidence before Lee notices the truck was slowing down, revealing that they are reaching their intended destination. They succeeded in escaping a sewer across. Lee takes out the truck's triad crew before the others arrive, would notice that they were gone, emerging from the sewers to reveal they are in Las Vegas. Lee spots the Red Dragon Casino, which shares the same name as the Tan's yacht. They realize that Rain would be laundering the $100 million there and set out to investigate.
Yeah.
So my thing is this. So do you just automatically give the – so do you automatically just go ahead and ride the company's yacht that has the same name as the hotel, the casino? You're a triad. And you're supposed to be in the shadows. No one's supposed to know that's what you're doing, but you have a huge ass logo on your,
yeah,
on your boat that says, that has the casino name on it.
Yeah. I don't know, John. I call that good branding. I don't know what's wrong with you.
But yeah, you're right. It was the white dude, John Tao.
I told you it was.
Okay.
That was a cultural appropriation because that was the switch and bait. Because
okay.
We were like, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, I got you.
I'm sorry.
But no, I'm glad that you proved me wrong on that. I do appreciate that because I am sometimes wrong. But, you know, for Rush Hour 1. But, you know, that was so
funny.
Let's talk about the fact, too, where Jackie and where we have Leah and Carter both arguing back and forth. with each other. It's like, well, I'm going to kick you back to the Ming Dynasty.
that was horrible and funny at the same time. He's like, I bitch slap you back to Africa. I was like, what the hell, Jackie? Dang.
Well, I'm going to hit you so hard that you're going to go back to the Ming Dynasty.
Dang. Man, they were at each other's throats.
They were.
But then, okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, this is something weird that I have. When I look at movies like that, and they're like tied up in trucks or whatever, and I think, how would I get out of that? Like, I'm tied up in the back of a truck. How do I get out of that? Like,
my thing is this. That looked like it was fucking duct tape that they put around them. It didn't. It looked like duct tape to me. It's like, okay, well, we're gonna put you up against the wall with this huge ass tape, and you're never gonna get loose. This kind of reminds me of 1960s Batman, where it's like, what's gonna happen to Batman? He's him and Robin are both tied up together.
Yeah.
Find out next week as we find out how they get loose. This also feels like that in a sense, because. Yeah. Look how loose that was. And then then all of a sudden you see Lee going up the wall and he winds up taking and getting out of there. And then you have this one thing that's like a sexual joke though. He says, yeah, bite it. Chew that rope.
Yeah. Bite it. Bite it like a monkey. Bite it.
Bite it.
Like, terrible.
Yeah. And then you get this other thing too now where, let's see where I'm at. But yeah, and then you have, Melina that takes out a gun and reveals herself as a Secret Service agent and attempts to arrest Huli and the chaos of, okay, hold on. Maybe I'm jumping a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Mm-hmm. At the Red Dragon, Lee and Carter attend to its grand opening night before being forcefully split up. Melina pulls Lee away to a social dance area where she convinces Lee she didn't sell them out. While filling him on the casino's extreme security and operations, she informs the investigating engraving plates, which were used to make the counterfeit money and being transported secretly via to a container in the background, and they need to reach it, where she then leaves. Lee reveals to Carter on Melina that they need to do something to successfully infiltrate the casino's back end. Mm-hmm. Carter makes a big commotion to distract the security staff while Lee attempts to infiltrate the back and stowing atop one of the containers being brought in. He is intentionally successful before security cameras notices and Huli captures him, placing a small Ying Tao grenade in his mouth while she actually does something different and gags him. Hu Li threatens Lee to obedient or she will detonate the grenade, blowing his head before taking him up to the penthouse, where it is revealed that Tan faked his own death and, as Lee suspected, is in charge of the operation. After a few taunting words, Tan notices Rain heading for the penthouse, allowing Rain as partner. Like, Lee's father was untrustworthy and leaves to settle Rain, leaving Hu Lee to do whatever she wants. So I also like the scene where you have the gay person coming over to Carter.
Oh yeah, well, where he said we can't go into the casino like this, we gotta go in high rollers. That was Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, Henry Pivots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always liked him as an actor.
Oh, man. He did a great job in that scene.
Let's see here. I'm thinking of Gator. I want to put an animal on you. I want it.
Yeah. It's like you got the mocha skin and
the mocha skin. Shoulders. Yeah.
I want to put a dead animal on you. I was like, ugh.
At first, I thought he was going to come out looking like James Earl Jones from Coming to America the way he was saying it. I'm like, no. Is he going to put a line or something on it?
Hell no. With you. He's like, there are a lot of men looking for us, as they should. Because the way they came in, he's like, yeah, I'm looking for something for me and my partner. He's like, yes, I like to dress up couples. No, this is not like this. We're police officers. Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Okay. Yes. You're gay police officers and you like to dress together.
Just like they're like role playing village people or something.
Yeah. And then he went to take his measurement. He's like, oh, watch his sweetness. Honeycombs. Ooh, feisty. Damn.
What? I loved it. Like, yeah. He's probably one of my favorite actors, though, to be honest with you. When he shows up 110%. And he does. I really like him.
I don't know.
But yeah. Face. So you have Carter, who's actually dressed up like has like crocodile kind of.
And he did a good job.
Yeah, he did a good job on him. I also like Lee's suit. Lee's suit is fire.
And he had that chain around his neck.
Yeah.
Man, he was looking sharp.
He was that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely thought that scene was pretty funny. Would it hold up today? I don't know.
oh, that scene.
But with them going into the gate?
Yeah, I think it would have held up.
Yeah, I think it would be okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. I just thought it was funny though. But then you have the whole entire thing where Carter is now trying to distract everyone, but the Martin Luther King, I have a dream, speech, and then him doing the craps and winning at the craps games and stuff like that. I had a dream that white people, even Asian people and black people can come together to play craps.
Oh my God. Okay, he did have a point though, because he came in there with like a bunch of money. He dropped like 10 G's and he gonna give him $500 chips. And he's like, oh boy, because I'm black, you give me $500 chips and everybody else got $1,000. No, sir. Are you racist? I am not, sir.
And I think that's also
coming here with this and you giving me $500 chips.
Isn't that the same guy who played on Beverly Hills Cop 2? That was the casino, worked at the casino? That was Eddie Murphy's partner?
Is it? Really?
I don't know. It just, he looked familiar though.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Because, no, I don't think so, sir.
Yeah. And he's so calm. He's like, no, sir. I am not racist, sir.
And then finally, Jackie, then of course Lee winds up sneaking into the back. He winds up getting on top of the thing. And then all of a sudden, you have Carter goes, okay, well, you know what? We're good. Let's go in and play some craps.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and then of course, Jackie gets face to face with the camera and he realizes his cover's blown. He goes into the room where everybody's counting up the money, and then that's where the fight breaks out. And then that's when we have Hu Lee, who winds up. Now, this is like the only dangerous thing that she's done all the whole entire movie. It made me feel like, okay, I'm a little bit scared for her because she just put a bomb in his throat. So you wait until like the climax of the movie to actually do something threatening.
Yes.
So what did you think of that?
Well, it is a scene where, like you said, he was fighting everybody and he went through this, like small little window.
Like the counter window
Yeah. And then I saw the blooper parts and how many times he did that. Without the bloopers, you're like, man, how did he do that? Could I have like just slid my body? Like if there are guys coming at me from every direction, and then there's this little counter window. Could I have just like slid under that?
I don't know. I'll be stuck like Winnie the Pooh.
Sorry. But yeah, I think of myself in these situations, even though I'd never be in them. But yeah, yeah, like you said, that was dangerous. But I do like what Lee had did. He let her stay close so she wouldn't detonate the bomb. Like he kissed her with the bomb in her mouth and then he put her face side by side. Cause that's what I would have done. I'm like, no, you come with me. Cause they wouldn't blow it up unless they have a death wish.
Right. But yeah. And then you have Melina, who then takes out a gun, reveals herself as a Secret Service agent and attempts to arrest Hu Li, the chaos that follows. Li manages to dispatch Hu Li's men before Hu Li kicks him out of the window, what a surprise, where he falls down onto the casino floor. Melina and Hu Li then fight, and Melina sweeps the trigger for Li's gag grenade out onto the casino floor as well. Li mechanically runs to try and find it, but runs into Carter, who made much such a scene that drew all of the casino security on him. Mm-hmm. They are briefly approached, but before gunshots pierce the casino, air caused by Hu Li and Melina fighting over the gun, resulting in the casino patrons madly trying to escape. Hu Li finally manages to gain the upper hand and shoots Melina in the arm because she sucks at shooting, jumping out onto the casino floor after a frantic search for the trigger, having been kicked around in the scuffle of everyone trying to run out. Carter and Li end up together again, and Carter, noticing the grenade's light in Lee's mouth, and starts pulling the tape off of Li's lower head. Li manages to spit the bomb out seconds before Hu Li finds the trigger and detonates it. So I like how you had that scene where Carter and Li are both looking at each other, he's...
Yeah.
And yes, yeah. Man, you didn't tell me that you had a bomb in your mouth, because I did.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that is. That was intense though. Because It was like every second counted in like unwrapping and everything. Oh my God.
That scene was, because you're not sure if Lee's going to explode or not.
Yeah.
Right? And something's going to majorly happen to him. So. Yeah. Yeah, and then him having the bomb in his mouth, and then of course the casino exploding because of it. Yeah, that was more of a danger. That's one thing I can say is, like, at least with the danger element with that actually works for me.
Yeah.
Finally, after an hour and 30 minutes into the movie.
Well, also she sucks at taping him, because there shouldn't have been no way that he found a little piece of the tape and unraveled him. But that's just...
This is the most rushed job of a triads that I ever seen.
Lower tier triads.
You know what though? The triads in Daredevil was a lot more threatening than this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is a comedy special triads. Like,
right. So Lee reveals to Carter that Han's plans are before Furious Hu Li interrupts, throwing a spear at them. Carter tells Lee to head to the penthouse to prevent Han from escaping with the plates when he handles Hu Li. Carter taunts Hu Li, saying he won't hold back fighting her, giving her encounters with him. Then they brawl with Hu Li charging at Carter with a sword taken from one of the Chinese statues, and Carter trying his best to escape his advantage. Mm-hmm. Hu Li eventually nabs Carter, pinning him with the sword at his heart. Carter eventually triumphs after accidentally knocking Hu Li out by falling onto a statue, releasing the swinging halberd as in its hand, then stabs her. Carter discovers the dollar bills he took as evidence saved him, then proceeds to insult Hu Li before running off to find Li at the penthouse. So this is what makes me laugh, because you know what? Just because you're a woman doesn't mean I'm going to hold back now. Just because you're a very gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
Very fit woman.
Yeah.
And I'd like to take to the movies.
I like focus, Carter, focus.
I like definitely like the confrontation between them with the spear, and then her getting knocked out, and then Benjamin, which is actually the Benjamins, and his he goes, "Thank you, Benjamin."
Yeah. I mean, I like the thing she did with her hair though. That was that and the bomb. That was the most exciting thing she did.
Right, but also too, I like how Lee puts it like this: "Man, we could have had something special." But you one crazy ass bitch.
Yeah, she is.
But then in the penthouse, Rain opens the safe and takes out the plates, running into Tan as he leaves after Rain announces he is cutting their deal short because this is an hour and 40-minute movie and keeping the plates. Tan stabs him in a surprise betrayal. Lee confronts Tan, taking a gun from Rain's body and corners Tan. This is Carter appears after a tense standoff where Tan admits he killed Lee's father. Tan knocks the gun away from Li, and Carter's direction. As Tan manages to retrieve it, and after only seconds from shooting in Carter's direction, Lee kicks Tan out through the window, where he falls to his demise, landing on a parked cab. Who Lee then erupts, enters, holding an armed time bomb. Realizing the situation, Lee and Carter leap out the window just as the bomb goes off, killing Hu Lee and two narrowing escaping by sliding down on a decoration wires and their jackets. The wires snap and they swing onto the casino's flag and their momentum sending them into the path of oncoming traffic. Through Lee's nimble skill and Carter's dumb luck, they narrowly escape being hit by three assistive trucks. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. What did you think about Rain saying, okay, well, now I'm going to take everything that I have and I'm leaving? I'm like, dude, of course you're going to leave. Your hotel's, the hotel's in shit shape.
Yeah.
So of course you're not going to want to back this guy up anymore.
No.
And then he goes, and of course, you know, he made that whole entire deal thing where, with the speech about the dragon and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And then Tan's like, I always hated that fortune cookie shit.
Yeah. I would too. Some stuff he read off some fortune cookie about luck and this dragon represents.
About greed.
Yeah. All that other mess he read somewhere. Man, please. I didn't care for him. It was like, okay, fine, he's out of the way.
Right. It's like, okay, he's out of the way now. So therefore, he was not really much of anything. He was just a billionaire backing Tan up. That's all he was. There was nothing really special about him.
No.
So, you know, like I said, one layered, one noted, which is fine for a comedy of the early 2000s, because really, we're just in here for the laughs and seeing Carter and Lee back at it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? But then you have, now this is something that I thought that was funny though, was, you know, now you have Huli waking up unconscious. She comes back and she tries to blow them up with this big old huge ass bomb that looked like it came from the C4 from the first Rush Hour movie.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're one crazy ass bitch. jumping out the window. And then they glide down there. And then, of course, Lee is over there screaming because he's actually running alongside a 18-wheeler while Carter is over there dangling, being beat up by the 18-wheeler.
Yeah, that scene was pretty cool. Like, just them gliding down and, like I said, the truck. Yeah, I like that scene.
That scene was pretty cool. And then they finally drop down, and they're like, oh, that was a close one. Then all of a sudden, the oncoming traffic. First it was an 18-wheeler that came at them.
Which I'm like, you can't survive that, right? Like, you can't just lay down and then.
I even wonder about the Fast and the Furious movies. I'm like, how the hell can that little car
get under? Now, you know, that's just fantasy. Now, everybody.
That's called family. That's what it's called. I'm wondering, I can't help it. If I see the 18-wheeler, my mind goes straight to that movie. I'm like, how do they fit those fucking cars underneath there like that? Same thing with this. I'm like, how did they survive that?
Yeah, because I'm like, you can't survive that. I don't know.
But still, it was hilarious, though.
I don't want to be in that situation to know.
Right, me either. I don't even like passing 18-wheelers, nevertheless trying to lay there. But
yeah.
But you know what, though? I still like this scene. I'd laugh my ass off on it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that as far as that goes. Then later at the airport, Sterling thanks Lee for successfully solving the case. Malena says that she would like to thank Lee and proceeds to kiss him in an event witnessed from afar by Carter. All three plan to go their separate ways. Carter to Los Angeles, Malena to New York, and Lee back to Hong Kong. After Malena heads to her flight, Lee and Carter share one last goodbye. But also, too, Lee also gets a kiss from Malena. Lee then gives Carter, who graciously declines at first, the money, because he ends up saying no to Carter because of the fact that it's evidence. I'm like, how is it evidence if you want it? But still, his father police, so He also winds up giving Carter his dad's police badge, mm-hmm. stating that he can finally let it go. In return, Carter gives Lee the $10,000 that he won from gambling at Caesar's Palace, which potentially contains the counterfeit money. Okay, Lee is more critical in the refusal of the money, but Carter is able to persuade Lee to take the money and forget about his sense of duty as a cop. Mm-hmm. Just for once, after Lee reveals that he has always wanted to go to Madison Square Garden and watch mm-hmm. a New York Knicks basketball game, Carter mm-hmm. tells Lee he could go for one more vacation, and the two of them decide to take another vacation in the Big Apple, dancing off Michael Jackson, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Dun, 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 dun.
So, don't stop until you get enough. So,
that's all we can say.
Yep. So what did you think of this scene where them going their own separate ways? Lee acting, he goes, look, I'm a player. Because, man, you didn't even look back. Nah, I'm a player.
That's yeah. What you do, dude. Yeah. Yeah. That's how you do it. Kissing don't look bad.
Right.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know how in the world Rush Hour 3 is introduced. If you know how there was a nice flow into Rush Hour 1 to 2, and they're right. Like, oh, okay, we're going to Hong Kong. And then it's like, Pyrrhum, Hong Kong. But then it's like, oh, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. It's like Paris. Rush Hour 3, it's like, wait, what happened? Why are we in Paris? I forgot now how they were in Paris. But yeah, I thought it was it's like a bow tied to, I don't know what I'm talking about, John.
I get what you're saying. It's like a nice little bow tie that ties everything cohesively together. Thanks. For the first one because of the fact that it doesn't, even though it's been 98, about 4 years since we've last seen Lee and Carter together.
Yes.
It still feels like it's just yesterday that they left together to go to Hong Kong and spend time with each other and have a vacation together.
Yes.
Yes. Opposed to the third one where all of a sudden it just feels like it's just rushed together to have a sequel for the sake of having a sequel. See, you're welcome.
I like the ending. I thought it everything was tied together nicely.
I think so too. It's a nice little cohesive. It has a lot of cohesiveness to it. I just don't like some of the stuff within the movie itself. I'm not talking about the stuff with the aging or anything like that. As for me, I didn't like the villains this go around, opposed to when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the woman this time or anything like that.
Yeah.
But where do you stand on this out of 10? Now that we are stripped away from the nostalgia and now we're going to the modern day rating.
Okay, I would give it like a 7.5.
Wow. Okay, so you're still kind of high on it.
Yeah-ish.
I'm just wondering.
Well, it was like the comedy part, and then it was like this little part that didn't make sense with the villains.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because of how annoying the woman was in this movie, because I've seen the whole entire comedy aspect over and over again with her knocking him out. Yeah. It was funny the first two times, and then seeing her do it two more times, I'm like, okay, I'm done with the repetitiveness of the movie. And there was no layers or anything like that, and I get it as a comedy and stuff, but I wish that there would have been a lot more storytelling within it for me to be more invested in it. I liked it, but I didn't love it like I did when I was a teenager. And it's not because of the technology. It's not because of the pop culture references or anything like that. I should still laugh at some of the pop cultural references, all except maybe the part where you actually have Lee dancing to P. Diddy's song of I'll Be Missing You.
Yeah.
Because at first I always loved that song. Now I have to actually send it up to the cloud because I'll never touch that song again. So with that being said, I'm going to have to give this a 5.3 out of 10.
Damn.
Yeah, I liked it, but I didn't love it. The first one was my favorite going into it. I just think there was more things for me to be invested in, more things for me to care about. I cared about the investment of the little girl that's been taken, the chemistry between Jackie and the father, Carter, then also too, Lee being a fish out of water in, Carter's world, just as in the second one's, Carter's kind of like a fish out of water in his world, but still, some of those things worked, some of them didn't, but for me, it's gonna be a 5.3.
Yeah.
For me.
That's a good point. There wasn't anything to invest in.
No,
like you, you had the little girl, but now it's like, okay, what do I have now to care about?
Right. Because now all it is just a backstory for Lee to actually get some closure. And I like that. I like the fact that we actually have closure to a character.
Yes. They could have had a dramatic scene where, like, look at his father picture or a flashback to him and his father, you know, some trope like that to give it something. You know?
Right, but I think it was also, if they did that, it might have slowed down the pacing of the comedy, maybe. They decided not to do it, maybe.
Yeah, they should have did something.
I think they should have done something extra.
Maybe they thought the first one was like, okay, we're not going to be too serious with this one. I wonder if they rushed, like, the production and
I don't think so, because think of it like this. It's been 3 or 4 years since the original.
Okay.
So they had the chance to actually build the script up, be able to develop the script and produce everything. So I don't think it was actually rushed. I think it was just the script and the writing itself was the issue.
Yeah, because it was the beginning of the end. Because right. Then you go into Rush Hour 3.
Yeah, Rush Hour 3, that movie sucked.
Okay, the only funny part was when he was in the martial arts studio. Like,
yeah,
had, like,
that part made me laugh.
Little bits here and there.
I wouldn't be surprised if you know, remember when Carter is singing to the Michael Jackson song at the very beginning of Rush Hour 2. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the director and producer is like, you know what? People really love that singing aspect of the second one. Let's make Jackie and Carter both sing now in Rush Hour 3.
Yes.
No, let's not.
Well, they're going to have to come with it for Rush Hour 4 now. I mean, I'm tired of all these movies that they're nostalgic and you got decades and then you come out with something and it's crap. It's like I've been waiting 20 plus years.
It's hard to do a movie where a movie's like 30 years old.
Yeah.
And so then they recapture that magic. Yeah, you can. There are some movies that are able to do it and there's some movies that are not able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard to do, and I want them to not center around Lee's character now. I want them to, because of the closure that Lee got, I want now the same thing for Carter.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, all in all, that's going to be it as far as this review goes, but I just want to mention this real quick. Rush Hour 3 was a budget of $125 to $140 million, and it made $258.1 million, which kind of broke even. So it did... But if you take a third of that away, that's how much it actually made at the theaters. So,
dang.
But it didn't really, so it kind of broke even.
Yeah, and I saw it in theaters and I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I actually waited for this one to come out on DVD. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as this goes. But come on, guys, this is what I want you guys to do. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, Don Tucker will be back on here at the show with me again. And we're going to be talking about Cobra Kai, the final season of Cobra Kai, at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We just got done wrapping up our Dexter review, so all the Dexter Original Sin stuff is now done. So I'll be focusing on other things for us to be able to talk about. But also, too, we're also sponsored by Fanatics. If you don't know what Fanatics are, I'm going to tell you this. I just bought myself a brand new Celtics hoodie that is really comfortable. I definitely recommend you guys getting your sportswear from Fanatics. Also too, even though I'm not an Eagles fan, they have a bunch of Eagle stuff on their website that you guys can actually purchase because the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And you guys are more than welcome to buy some Eagles stuff as well. Just use the promo code when you click that link in the description below and get yourself some merch. So, and we're also sponsored by the WWE store as well. That's alongside Fanatics as well.
What?
So, yeah.
Oh snap! I got a WWE shirt on.
Oh,
let
snap.
Me talk
there
to
you
ya. Let me talk to ya, LA Knight.
But yeah, guys, this is gonna be it as far as this goes. Thank you so much, Tamika, for joining me for Rush Hour 1 and Rush Hour 2. It's always a pleasure to have you back on the show, as always.
Oh, smash the like button.
Smash that like button,
subscribe,
and that bell on the right hand side to allow you guys to know when I have something new out. Yeah. And always until next time, guys.
Yeah.
Have a great and safe night. And we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Thank you.
Yeah, get her some more wigs.
Thank you.
She really needs it. All right. Thank you. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.